business, it has always been much more informal. It's a personal thing between guru and disciple. A person wants to become a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he goes out and finds a guru and forms a personal relationship, and that's it. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, saw the need to organize things systematically in order to help fallen conditioned souls in Kali Yuga who have very little initiative, very little power to go out and make their own spiritual life. What kind of Krishna consciousness would we have, to be honest, each one of us, look at ourselves, if ISKCON didn't exist? Even those of us who decide to leave ISKCON, we wouldn't have ever gotten to that position to be able to go out on our own without ISKCON being there in the first place. Even if we, as those of us who have quit it, we were created, our spiritual life was created by Prabhupada's institution. So he created this for a transcendental purpose. You can argue, and even we have the essay by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur saying that all organized religions are by necessity corrupt. And therefore, theoretically, it's better that religion just be, spiritual life just be a personal thing. But we have to consider the situation of the modern age. There is so much organization. Trillions of dollars every year are spent on advertisement to convince us to be materialists, to produce and consume things that are meant to destroy human beings in the world. We're sent to schools where all these materialistic ideas are inculcated in us. So we spend 20 years in these schools getting trained up as materialists. We watch television for hours every day, getting more bombardment of propaganda from materialism. So strong propaganda, organized, systematic propaganda has to be made against this materialism. An institution is and was and is required to accomplish anything practical against the powers of Kali. Therefore, ISKCON was created. That's the purpose of ISKCON. And what ISKCON requires to be successful is a strong core, even a small one, of dedicated servants who are ready to give their lives. That doesn't mean commit suicide, but dedicate their lives for propagating pure Krishna consciousness. There must be pure Krishna consciousness propagated, not something mixed or impure. And it should be propagated. You may keep a pure life for yourself, but you should share it. Others need it. So pure Krishna consciousness needs to be spread. And to do that, it requires having an institution like this. Therefore, Prabhupada got the lawyers to come, and the papers were drawn up, and devotees were picked out. Devotees and a few guests were picked out to be the trustees of ISKCON, and the corporation was founded. It was meant to be a perpetual corporation that should continue at least for the next 10,000 years.
Okay, so go on to the bulletin. What's the verse?
Seven didn't have a purport. Maybe it's 9, 10. Let me see. 9 and 10, I think.
Yes.
Okay. 9 doesn't have a purport. Sarva Shastra Dipyusha Sarva Vedaika Satpala Sarva Siddhanta Ratnaya Sarva Lokaika Drikpada Sarva Bhagavata Prana Shrimad Bhagavata Prabhu Kali Dvandu Ditaditya Sri Krishna Parivartita Paramananda Bhaktaya Prema Parshakshadayati Sarvada Sarva Sevyaya Sri Krishnaya Namostute.
Adhika Bandhu Matsangin Panduro Madhvadana Madhistaraga Madhvagya Madhananda Namostuti Asadu Saduta Dain Adini Jo Tatakaro Amabuncha Kadachinma Ibnadit Kantayot Sura Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Chant two verses together. Kechit pushpayer dalai kechit palavayer ampurai pulaihi shigbis twagbir dvishadbis cha bubuju krita bhajana Sarve mito darshayanta Sva sva bhujya ruchim krita Asanto asayantascha Vyavajah ruksaeshvara Kechit pushpayer dalai kechit Pallavayer ampurai palahi Shigbis twagbir dvishadbis cha Kubujo krita bhajana Sarve mito darshayan Swaswa bhujya ruchim prita Asanto asayantascha Vyavajahruk saheshvara Kechit
Someone
Pushpaihi By flowers, dalai, by nice leaves of flowers. Kechit, someone, palavai, on the surface of bunches of leaves. Ampurai, on the sprouts of flowers. Palahi, and some on fruits. Shigbihi, some actually in the basket or packet. Twagbihi, by the bark of trees. Drishadbihi, on rocks. Cha, and bubujuhu, enjoyed. Krita bhajana, as if they had made their plates for eating. Translation, another verse came. Translation of this verse by Srila Prabhupada. Among the cowherd boys, some placed their lunch on flowers, some on leaves, fruits, or bunches of leaves. Some actually in their baskets, some on the bark of trees, and some on rocks. This is what the children imagined to be their plates as they ate their lunch. Sarve mitam, sarve, all the cowherd boys, mitaha, to one another. Darshayantaha, showing, Svasva bhojya ruchim pritak. Different varieties of foodstuffs brought from home. With their separate and different tastes. Asantaha. After tasting, they were laughing. Hasayantaha cha. And making others laugh. Abhyavajaku. Enjoyed lunch. Saha Ishvara. Along with Krishna. Translation and purport by Prabhupada. All the coward boys enjoyed their lunch with Krishna, showing one another the different tastes of the different varieties of preparations they had brought from home. Tasting one another's preparations, they began to laugh and make one another laugh. Purport. Sometimes one friend would say, Krishna, see how my food is relishable. And Krishna would take some and laugh. Similarly, Balaram, Sudama, and other friends would taste one another's food and laugh. In this way, the friends very jubilantly began to eat their respective preparations brought from home. This is a very informal assembly, not like very strict brahmacharya ashram, where you're issued standard plates and everybody has to eat on the same plate. One day we decide, okay, today we use the metal plates, and if anybody comes up with a leaf plate, he's chastised, and vice versa. The day there's leaf plates, if someone tries to use a metal plate, he's chastised. But here, every boy is eating on whatever he wants to eat on. Some on leaves, some on the barks of trees, some on rocks. So this is a very loosely disciplined assembly. But these boys don't need to be disciplined anymore. Krita punya punja. They've done all the disciplines. Whether imposed by others or accepted by their own volition, they've gone through all the austerities in past lives. They've lived in many brahmacharya ashrams, and now they're free. They're graduated. And they can sit down with Krishna on the bank of the Jamuna and enjoy lunch as they like, according to their individual tastes. That individuality is there in Krishna consciousness. But discipline of ashram life means we voluntarily put aside some of that freedom and accept some regulation to prepare ourselves for something important. That's the purpose of ashram life. It's not a prison where the prisoners have to eat off of regulation plates with forks that they can't stab each other with and whatever else, rubber forks, whatever they use in prison. And everything is regulated because it's a prison. Because they're being punished. They're being kept under strict restrictions so they don't harm themselves and each other. A prison or an insane asylum. It's not like that. Brahmacharya ashram is not a prison or an insane asylum. They were locked up and kept under strict discipline because we're dangerous or we're a criminal. No, it's voluntary. A person enters this place because he wants to be disciplined, he wants to prepare himself to go out and save the world. So we have to undergo some purification through discipline to prepare for that. A brahmachari is assisting his guru in preaching and preparing to become a guru for the next generation. That's a brahmachari's purpose of a brahmachari's training. He may get married, he may become a grihastha, or he may become a sannyasi, but the preparation is to be ready for a spiritual life. These boys are already ready. They've been through all the preparations, and therefore they don't need to be restricted or regulated. Anybody could go out in the forest, although I guess there are people who are not living, if you're living in a huge city, you may not have access to any forests. Or they have a big park in the city, but even in the daytime, you don't dare to go out there alone. Someone will rob you and maybe kill you. So maybe, some people don't have access to go out and have lunch in the forest with their friends. There's no forest available that's safe. But many could do that, imitate this pastime. Go out with your friends to the woods and eat on the rocks. But it's not the same thing. You can externally imitate this pastime with your friends. But the bhava, the mood, is not there. This pastime is special, not just because they're having a picnic in the woods, but because they're having it with Krishna. And they're all focused on Krishna. Otherwise, what are the friends there for? What is their motive? Just to stimulate their senses or go and cause some disturbance to someone else in the name of fun? These boys, their purpose is to make Krishna happy. And therefore, when they go through these activities, when they engage in these activities of having a picnic in the woods, they're enjoying the highest ecstasy. And the great sage, Shukadeva, who's not interested in anything material, in a picnic in the woods or anything material, he takes trouble to glorify this as wonderful. That these boys, some of them are eating on rocks and some of them right out of their baskets. It amazes Shukadeva Goswami, it interests him. Hare Parinishtitopi Naya Gunye Uttama Shloka Nilaya Grihita Cheta Rajar Sher Akana Yadavitavan. Shukadeva tells in the beginning of the second canto, very first chapter, he tells Parikshit, trying to explain how great the Bhavatam is. Look at me, Shukadeva says. I was perfectly fixed in Brahman realization. I had it made. I could have left this world without even saying goodbye. And no one would have stopped me. But even so, Uttama Shloka Leela, these descriptions of pastimes, hearing about the wonderful, playful activities of Lord Uttama Shloka, Krishna, and his incarnations, that has some strange effect on you. It had an effect on me. Grihita Cheta, it captured my heart. And I remained in this world. I went back to my father's ashram, Vyasadeva's ashram, and I studied this book very carefully. Nirgranta Apyarukame. About Shukadeva it said, there's asked, how is it that this sage, the son of Vyas, who rejects everything of dualism, of materialism, how is it that he took the trouble to study the Bhagavatam? And the answer is the very first famous verse. Atmaramas Chamunayo, spoken by Suta Goswami. Atmaramas Chamunayo, Nirgranta Apyarupame, Kurvan Jahoi Tukim Bhaktim, Ittam Bhuta Gono Harihi. This is how amazing and potent the qualities of Lord Krishna are. How attractive he is. That even the self-satisfied sages, of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives several interpretations of each one of these words. He gives 64 interpretations of this verse. The self-satisfied sages, the self-satisfied materialists, and others, the self-satisfied devotees, they're satisfied within themselves. The Paramahamsas are enjoying the bliss of Brahman. The devotees are enjoying the bliss of Krishna Leela. The materialists, they think they're enjoying the bliss of sense gratification. So they're self-satisfied. They think they don't need any help. They think their life is fine the way it is. But even the Atmaramas can't help but be attracted by when they hear about Krishna's wonderful qualities. His static qualities and his dynamic qualities. The things that he always is, and the things that he does, and the things that momentarily qualities manifest in him come and go, and some of them stay. All these qualities, including his activities, his relationships with his devotees, his beauty, his fame, his strength, and everything else, these qualities attract even the materialists, even the impersonalists, and especially the devotees. Nirgunta, even if they're Nirgunta. Nirgunta was explained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can mean no material knots of desire. It also means, Grunta also means book. So people who don't read books, ignorant people don't read books. Some people don't know how to read. Some people don't have an interest in reading. Some people don't have enough money to buy a book. Some people have graduated beyond all shastras and they think they don't have to read any. They think they're paramahamsas and therefore they don't have to read. Some are really paramahamsas. They've assimilated all the books. They don't have to pick any up. Sukadeva was Nirgunta. He didn't read any books. He didn't come to his father's Gurukul to read books. Only the Bhagavatam. That one book only. Otherwise he didn't study in school. He didn't even take Upanayanam. He didn't even get the Brahman thread. He never studied the Vedas. He never got initiated, Sukadeva. But he did take the trouble to study Bhagavatam. Because Krishna's qualities are so attractive. Even the self-realized impersonal sage like Sukadeva is attracted. Not the envious impersonalists, but those impersonalists who are not envious, who have the potential to become devotees, as soon as they hear about Krishna, they become transformed. Sukadeva is one example. Another example is the four Kumara brothers. It wasn't by hearing, but by smelling the tulsi leaf on the lotus feet of Lord Narayan that they changed. As Lord Narayan was walking toward them to greet them in Vaikuntha, they became devotees immediately. And so they came to Vaikuntha as impersonalists just to see out of curiosity. But they met Lord Narayan as pure devotees. Transformed in a moment by even just smelling the tulsi leaves at his lotus feet. To be able to become transformed like that, you have to have the disposition, the potential. Those who are envious, who have knowledge of Krishna but are envious of him and don't want to let him be the supreme, they will not become attracted. We discussed that the last class I gave. So that includes the Pashugnas, who will not be attracted to the narrations of Krishna's glories, except for the killer of the self, the Pashugna. That includes the impersonalists, who are killing their own souls, their own spiritual life. And if they're preaching to others this impersonalism, they're killing others, the souls or the spiritual life of others. You can't actually kill the soul, but you can do a good job of ruining someone's spiritual life. So we call that spiritual suicide and spiritual murder. It's practically the worst possible crime. Better you went out with a hatchet and cut people up in the street and just did mayhem. And killed hundreds of people for no good reason. Better than preach Mayavad philosophy. It's a worse crime. But those who are others, even if they're impersonalists, if they're not envious against Krishna, then they can also be saved very easily just by the spread of this Krishna Katha. So Most of us are not ready to join Krishna at lunch. We haven't been invited yet. We may be sitting waiting for our invitation, but it's going to come later. Be invited to have lunch with Krishna. Of course, we have lunch with Krishna's prasadam. Krishna's sending his prasadam to us every day for our lunch. And we're sitting with the devotees. So that's the next best thing. But it would be really nice to get invited down the street to have lunch with Krishna himself. Maybe in the future. We're waiting for that invitation. In the meanwhile, we can serve Krishna and try to please him. And the best service is to spread his glories. Either directly, sit down with one people or 1,000 people and tell them the glories of Krishna, if you can get them to understand. Or tell them something that will get them prepared to hear the glories of Krishna. If you can do that, that's the best. And if you cannot do that directly, then do what will facilitate others doing that. The whole, today is the founding day of ISKCON. ISKCON is for that purpose, to disseminate the glories of Krishna consciousness in the pure form. Krishna consciousness is not a material commodity. It's a very intangible entity. It's just consciousness. You know, there's no commodities market in consciousness. They can't figure out what's the price. You know, you can't quote a price because it's too intangible. So there's, you know, on the stock exchange, the commodities market, consciousness is not on the list, especially Krishna consciousness. But that's what we have for sale. That's our commodity. That's our product. You know, this corporation exists to sell a product. The product is Krishna consciousness. It's not just a trademark. Just like, you know, Nestle's Quick. Well, everybody wants to buy Nestle's Quick. It's the real thing. Well, all it is sugar and some chemicals. And artificial chemicals at that. Nestle's Strawberry Quick. You know, someone sends me some from Australia, you know, as if it's a great gift. But all it is some sugar that I can get down the street, you know, for cheaper. And it's an artificial strawberry flavor. It's not even real strawberry. And if, you know, close your eyes, you could not, you know, you could never guess that it's supposed to be strawberry if you closed your eyes. So, but, you know, it has a label on it. Nestle's Quick. You know, and therefore, because it's from the big company and it's, you know, and in the third world countries, it's coming from the first world, from Switzerland. So they want to buy it. So also, Krishna consciousness is a label. It's a brand name. We shouldn't just superficially think we're interested in it because it's the real thing. But what is it? You know, we should analyze, what is the product? Or, you know, why should we be interested in it? What does Krishna consciousness mean? It's not just a label, a brand name. You know, we've got our thing going. And what do we call it? We call it Krishna consciousness. You can join it too. But we have to have an idea of what Krishna consciousness is. We don't want to make false propaganda and you know, make people pay $3 for a box of cheap sugar and artificial chemicals. We don't want to sell an ersatz artificial product. We want to know what we're selling and why people should have it. So what is Krishna consciousness? We're reading that now in the Bhagavatam. It means to be completely absorbed in Krishna, to think about him all the time. Just that, to think about Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness. Of course, being Krishna conscious means doing more than that, not just sitting around and thinking, but doing something for Krishna's pleasure. It's just a natural consequence of actually thinking about Krishna, is that you just can't help it, but you want to do something to make him happy. But basically, the idea is simply that, thinking about Krishna. And don't imagine that it's an easy thing in this world, in this day and age. Because we got so many other ideas in our head. We have so many problems. Life is so complicated in our modern world. And we find it's really hard to be able to simply think about Krishna, even while you're actively engaged in serving him. You got so many worries to think about, so many problems, so many distractions, some of them pleasant, some of them unpleasant, but they're all distractions because we're not thinking about Krishna. The pure devotees, they're also busy doing service, but they're able to think about Krishna all the time. And not, their consciousness doesn't slide down to the material level of anxiety and hatred and friendship and all this material duality. They're busy, just even more than we are. Prabhupada was busier than any of his disciples. They couldn't keep up with him, even physically, on morning walks and so on. Even though he was an old man and they were young men, they couldn't keep up with him. He was as busy and more busy than everybody else put together. But he was not ever in material consciousness. He was always thinking about Krishna, absorbed and obsessed with Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness. It's a simple personal thing. Krishna's a person, and Krishna consciousness means to be interested in him. And replace the other interests with interest in Krishna. If you're not interested in Krishna, then you're not going to make much advancement in Krishna consciousness. You may do something else that you put the label Krishna consciousness on. You may take the organization as a shelter for you to pursue your own goals. But the real purpose of this organization is to promote thinking about being interested in Krishna. Okay, I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Yes.
We don't charge.
For anybody can come and hear Krishna Katha, we don't charge.
Yes.
But how about sometimes we hold some programs, for example, you rent a hall, it's for the public, and you're going to make a drama or some kind of thing.
And
how
about
charging for
that? Oh, there can be exceptions. The better we have free programs, that we don't restrict it just to people who have money in their pocket. You might sell something at the program, just like you have a Rati Yatra. It's open for hundreds of thousands of people come, but you sell pakoras, a dollar each, so only some of the people can buy the pakoras. And everybody else who doesn't have any money can have free khichdi. But still, you can sell something, but still better the program is open to everybody without having to charge admission charge. Some temples I know, in some of the countries that have difficulty in making ends meet, they charge for the Sunday feast or even for the temple programs. Some temples in India and elsewhere, they charge to be allowed to come and take prasadam with the devotees. And that's unfortunate. Better that didn't have to happen.
But sometimes we have programs and you didn't charge, and then if you charge and you felt like quality people were there, and then just comes up the street coming and take the program.
Well, that might be a good argument, but it may go too far. That we only want to deal with what we consider high class people with money in their pocket, and poor people we're not interested in. But our purpose is to save everybody, not just the people with money in their pocket. So we shouldn't become prejudiced that we only deal with the high class people. That's the preaching spirit should be more universal than that.
And sometimes people might see. That's of no value if it's don't charge.
If it's free, it's for no value?
Yeah, that Prabhupada made that for the books.
Yeah, so we don't give the books, we generally don't give books away for free, although there's exceptions to that too.
So same thing, if you invite people for like a drama, for example, and you entry charge $5 or like minimum, people say, okay, it's going to be professional.
Well, it depends. It depends on the circumstance. I'm just talking general principles.
Yeah, okay.
You know, better that if you have a preaching center, I'm not a manager, but if your preaching center is the temple in the city, and everybody in the city is dependent on you for their Krishna consciousness, better you have a balanced program. That, okay, you have some programs for the elite, and you charge. Just like you have a restaurant, and you charge money for the prasadam. But you should also have a free program for everybody else. You should make sure everyone gets taken care of in the long run. No, but it's specifically, there's pashus and there's mriga. Pashu is a domesticated animal, a dependent animal. When you kill your pet dog, that's horrible. And when you kill a wild tiger, that's a different thing. So killing a mriga is not the same as killing a pashu, an animal that depends on you for its life.
So why pashu in a different soul?
Because there is that kind of figurative usage, there's precedent for it. Lord Shiva is called Pashupati. It doesn't just mean that dogs and cats are his followers. It means that the ghosts and spirits and other low-class creatures, they're called Pashus. And he's Pashupati, not just, the lord of the pet cats and dogs. So Pashu means, in general, innocent or helpless creatures. It also, in Shaivite philosophy, and you find it in some Upanishads, Pashu is a name of this, considered this, the finite soul is also called Pashu. So you have extended meanings. The original meaning is there, but there's also figurative meanings of the word Pashu. And philosophical meanings. It can also mean the soul, yeah. You see that in some of the Upanishads.
Sure.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. Oh, you need a microphone. So I'd like to thank Sarvagya Prabhu and the others who, even though they dragged themselves out of their sick beds to come anyway, even though they're sick.
Thank you. So I have a question about this ending. You can see that the one hearing about someone's glory. This envy towards him is awakened nationally in our part. For example, you may see that people are envious to very beautiful people, they try to harm to their beauty. There are many stories like experience, they are throwing nasty things towards their face in order to spoil their beauty. So,
yes.
And I see that. The same envy is awakens sometimes when we hear about Krishna, and this envy is disqualified us from hearing about Krishna. So, what is the process, what is the procedure of giving up this envy? How can we give it up?
Well, if the envy is very deep and all pervading, it's almost impossible. Someone who deeply hates Krishna has become an enemy of Krishna. So what can Krishna do with his enemies? He can only destroy them. So you have to go through, and it's not, the impersonalist can't simply be killed. They're there once or twice. Their envy is so deep, it would take many times of being killed by Krishna. Jaya and Vijaya are actually devotees, but they became demoniac and envious. It took three lifetimes, of course that was the arrangement, but they took three lifetimes to purify them. Hiranyakashipu was killed, but he wasn't immediately saved. He had to take birth again as Ravana. And then a third time as Shishupal. And only the third time did he get delivered. So he was a devotee underneath. What does it mean of someone who is not even a devotee and is simply envious? If he's really envious, Krishna is going to have to, through his agency of Maya, make that person suffer for hundreds of lifetimes before he has a chance. But if someone is only superficially envious, maybe a devotee fell down and picked up some envy. Maya infected him. And in the next life, he thinks he hates the devotees. These guys, they make me so mad. And he curses the devotees and gives them trouble. But he may be a devotee from his last life who's suffering some reaction. But that's superficial envy. It wears off, and then he gets taken over and surrenders and becomes a devotee himself. We see many cases of this. People who were hateful of the devotees, they thought they were hateful, and they ended up becoming devotees themselves. That's because it was superficial envy. So that can be dealt with just by, stuffing a gulab jamun in their face and tolerating their cursing. you know, and they get won over if they're superficially envious. Otherwise, it can take hundreds of lifetimes. Okay, we'll stop here. Oh no, yes, please. Marketing is a final step of a long procedure. You have to first of all know what your product is. You have to design the product. You have to produce it. You have to package it, and then you market it. Of course, it's all it should be an all coordinated program. You know, you design it to be marketed. You package it to be marketed. We're aiming at the market, but you have to go through several stages of development. So we package this product in this form, books. That's our main, you know, that's our core product. Second, we have prashadam. These are, you know, that's also a secondary product, secondary packaging of the product. I mean, consciousness is an intangible thing, but we put it in this tangible form, and in the tangible form of glob jewels. And then so first of all, design and produce the product, and then market it. That's a lot of work. And also, if you're going to actually have an effective program of selling a product, the salesmen have to be completely convinced of what they're selling. They have to know the product and believe in it. Otherwise, they won't be effective salesmen. So the whole, you know, the sales team has to be developed, and they have to become convinced and knowledgeable about their product. All these steps have to be taken care of, and then you can go out and market it. Then you can, you know, get into the details of how we're going to market.
Thank you. The reason I ask the question is that sometimes there's a core product of our corporation, and the reality of the corporation itself, they differ so significantly that even if people buy the books, and they become quite discouraged by what the audience can muster themselves in their life. I just discussed with Guru Sivananda, but I just wanted to ask for your take on this. Because he was telling yesterday how in Brazil the audience are ashamed, maybe not ashamed, but they don't want to wear fashionable clothes and in any way present themselves as anybody different in any way from the mainstream, so to say, quote unquote society.
Yes.
And we try to discuss the reasons for that.
So it happens, and the places where it's happening, there's an inertia. We can't just, you know, let's not worry about how we're going to change the whole world and all the different places where, you know, Krishna consciousness isn't being lived in a very attractive way. How about, let's try to create a counterexample. Let's try to create one place and situation where it is attractive. Like where we are, let's try to make it attractive here. You know, we can talk about, you know, how it's bad elsewhere, but what can we do about that? But that is our responsibility. Our business here is not just to take care of ourselves or even educate ourselves. We're part of the preaching movement. We have to make a proper presentation of Krishna consciousness by what we do, by the way we live our lives in this building. We have to make it attractive. Somebody's going to see it. Maybe the people in town are not, you know, just somebody's kids who want to, you know, some toffees. People are not that interested in what we're doing. But around the world, the devotees are interested. All around the world, devotees are very interested in what we're doing here. It's a great idea. Can it really be done? You know, I'm sure the doubts are there. Nice idea, but can it actually be done? So everyone's looking to see. The devotees are looking. And then their opinions matter. So I think we have to, you know, about this question of, you know, the problem of the product being ideal, but the reality being, you know, not very attractive, we have to rectify that right here. That's what they're looking, what money is being given to us for, and what devotees are looking for, that we can actually, you know, manifest something that's brahminical and therefore attractive. It's not the only kind of attraction. You know, building a marble temple up to the sky is also attractive if it's Krishna conscious. There can be rajasic Krishna consciousness that's very attractive, but here's an attempt to do something sattvic, which is almost unique, to have anything really sattvic in ISKCON that isn't, you know, passionate, because, you know, we have to passionately promote Krishna consciousness. So here's an attempt to just sit back and do something sattvic. If that can be done, it will be very attractive. It's already attracting attention, but the devotees are looking to see, is it going to succeed? So that's where we have to focus our worry. How are we going to make this succeed? What's happening elsewhere is unfortunate, but we have to worry especially about what's happening right here.
As you said, this is our circle of responsibility. If we change this here, we can change the world. Otherwise, we don't have any levers.
Yeah, well, we do have, I mean, this is a good opportunity. Devotees are coming here from all over the world, and they'll go back to where they came from. And if they pick up something good here, they'll bring it back. But we have to actually come up, we have to be up to that standard. We don't, you know, we're not saying everybody here has to become a Paramahamsa within 3 years. But we have to become more or less brahminical. That's what they're looking to see. They're not looking for absolute perfection, but they're looking for that we do what we claim we're doing. That isn't another sham, another fake thing. Yeah, 1 second.
Maybe I have to tell that Ross this question.
Okay.
No, I have a very unusual request.
Okay.
In the class, because today is the 40th anniversary of ISKCON, and there is a very nice poem written by Kalahanta Prabhu, your good brother. It's written for Prabhupada Centennial. It's very short.
Why don't we let Damodar ask his question, and then we'll end with the poem.
Yeah, that's what they want.
Okay. Please.
I expected us to become brahminical, but this fucking asking for myself. Expecting us to be brahminical, we ask to accept it as brahminical. What do you expect from us to be brahminical?
We should be brahminical. First of all, this is the Gaudiya Sampradaya, so we should be brahminical in the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had his brahminical pastimes with his brahminical devotees. We can look at that and emulate that. Our Lord Chaitanya was brahminical in the association of the Brahmins who were his devotees, in that mood. And then, what was Prabhupada's concept of brahminical culture? Even more important, we have to understand what Prabhupada conceived of as brahminical life. He had lots of things to say about that. He gave lots of instructions on that. Now we have to try to live that. You know, clean, simple, natural, honest in all things, honest. Not cheating, not lying, not pretending to be something you're not. That's brahminical. And not manipulating, not unnecessarily manipulating other people just to dominate and control them. That's brahminical. We have to try to be like that. And a Brahmin or a Kshatriya, the basic quality they both have that distinguish them from the lower categories of human society, the Brahmins and Kshatriyas are dedicated to selfless service. The Vaishyas and the Shudras can be selfish, and still they're dutiful. But the Brahmins and Kshatriyas have to be selfless. They have to dedicate their lives to the self-service of others. That's what we have to try to do. Tough. Really tough to come up to that standard, but we have to try. Okay, now we got a poem for Srila Prabhupada. When was this written?
Yeah.
Oh, for Prabhupada Centennial, this poem was written 10 years ago. Yes, sir?
It sums up Prabhupada's mission.
Oh.
It's a very short poem.
A short poem, okay. I don't know if I can read it well, but a poem for Srila Prabhupada by Kalakanta Das. You could have stayed in Vrindavan, where chanting is most sweet, or moved to holy Navadvip, in spiritual retreat. Your godbrothers had temples there, with room enough for you. to sit and preach each Gaur Purnima to a visitor or two. You could have said, it's Krishna's will. My visa was denied. I may have failed, but now I know, at least that I have tried. Your patron said you'd die abroad. Your godbrothers just scoffed. You could have said, we'll meet the boat and guide me safely off. You could have had one look at us and said, what have I done? And caught the next boat back to home, unblamed by anyone. The Westerners, you could have said, can go to hell and stay. Who would have disagreed with you? We were well on our way. Instead, you laid your final years like flowers at Krishna's feet. Siddhanta's smile, your hidden guide, Thakur's vision in reach, producing 80 volumes as you guided us along. You showed us how to cook prasad and preach Lord Krishna's song. As we preach the boys and girls from every land on earth, come forth to serve you, Prabhupada, renewed in second birth. I could have been a doctor had I but stayed in school. Might have made a couple million, built a fancy house and pool. I could have written novels, legislated laws and rules. I could have been a music star. I could have just been cool. Instead, I laid my youthful years like flowers at your feet. Malpuras caused my interest, samosas my defeat. My dad said, son, you're brainwashed. My friend said, you're a fool. My shortfalls as a Vaishnav numbered many, victories few. Reflecting on my bygone youth, as in midlife one is prone, I wouldn't trade your glance for gold, your words for precious stones. This morning on the Japa Trail, the northern star shone down, so fixed and true, it seemed like you were the devas circling around. But dawn concealed that heavenly stage and lit a wintry scene of all I am and all you are and all that lies between. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.